Of stories up there for you, bringing you up to date on the virus issue and the testing. They're going to allegedly ship 6 million test kits on Monday. I've seen no evidence whatsoever of those test kits either landing and being put into use or even existing. I think that was another one of those talks cheap things. Canada Prime Minister, Premier, whatever the hell he is, Pierre Trudeau. His wife is now infected. He has put himself in voluntary quarantine. His wife is positive. Tom Hanks and his wife, both positive. You'll see more celebrities here. What we're all waiting for is senators, congressmen, and some of those others in the nation's capital who have been talking about this for such a long time now, actually ending up experiencing it. We'll find out. Henry Nyman is back with us tonight. Dr. Nyman, one of the world's really foremost virologists, has international connections, worked on the SARS issue with the top Chinese scientists. He knows what's going on. And it's pretty wild out there, as always. Every day it just gets... We could pretty well expect what's going to happen, but to see it happen is fascinating because it's never really happened before like this. Henry, welcome back.
Well, Jeff, it's good to be back, and things have changed pretty dramatically since yesterday. There, switching over. I mean, yesterday it was basketball and calling off the season or at least postponing it, and then all the other sports hopped on board last night or today. Kind of, they were going to do the. March Madness was originally going to be switched to empty stadiums, and now that and all other college spring sports are done. The season's over.
And, what are your thoughts on that, real quickly, Henry? Should they have gone ahead and played the March Madness tournament in front of empty stands and just done it?
Well, I thought they would, but what I suspect is what they were worried is that the by the time they got there, they'd have players that were infected and then they'd be in close contact with other players on the game. And then
I get the idea.
Transmission there. I mean, that's essentially what happened with the pros, that they were going to do that in empty stadiums. And then when one was positive, they called it, and then a teammate was positive. And, you know, that's what's going to happen with all these team sports. You know, they're close together, they're practicing together, they're in the locker room, and you know, virus can run through the teams pretty easily. And I think that's what they were looking at. And that's what all of this is. I mean, it's not just sports. I mean, they called off everything. I mean, hockey's done. They're done with, they're going to delay the open of baseball.
The Atlantic ACC Conference, the Pac-12, they're all canceled out. All sports are canceled by those two renowned top level.
Yeah, and all the schools. Last time I looked, which was probably this morning, it's probably a lot bigger. I think there were 200 colleges and universities in the U.S. Are basically going on spring break, and they told them, don't come back. Pack up.
That's right.
And when spring breaks over, everything will be online. And
Harvard gave its students 5 days to get the hell out. That's what they did.
Well, that's what they all are. They're all essentially calling spring break early, so they're starting spring break like a week ahead of time. And they're saying, use that time to pack everything up, because once you go out for spring break, school's not going to be open. It sounds like they might, keep some of the dorms open for, maybe foreign students, once that it's a hardship to go back home.
Well, those that can't fly home to Europe, especially.
Right.
The other thing is...
Well, to Europe. Yeah. Okay, go ahead. I want to talk about Europe again.
Spring break.
Yeah, go ahead.
What's going to keep these students from partying and going to the usual spring break watering holes?
Oh, nothing.
That's right.
I mean, the whole point is, I'm pretty sure the whole point is the universities don't want the responsibility. They basically don't want them coming back from their normal venues.
Sick.
And then infecting everybody in the school, and then they'll have the problem that not only are they going to end up in the same place, which is, we're going to send everybody home and do it online, but they'll have a whole bunch of kids that are already sick, and then the parents will say, why didn't you just go to online from spring break? Why'd you bring everybody back and get them all infected and then send them home? So, and that's where they probably end up going. They end up going home with the virus, and they'd rather send them home without, or if they got the virus, they did it on their own. It wasn't that they came to school and somebody else gave it to them and they had to take it home. So I think the part of it is just, this is kind of a clean break for the universities. They're all leaving anyway, and take that opportunity to move, call moving vans or parents come by and help them get in cars. That's probably more likely to move vans and just move them out of the dorms and send them home and make sure they all have to have a computer to go to college anyway. So, they're good to go. It's not that big of a deal. And, that's probably the easier one. I mean, all these other things are going to have economic impacts. I mean, the professional sports aren't going to have the income. They're closing all the theaters, like in New York, and so that's all going to be closed.
This is a multi-trillion-dollar issue. When it's all done, you wait and see. Worldwide, huh?
Well, the question is, when it's all done? I mean, that's going to be what the key issue is. It's not really clear.
That's right.
How long this is going? I mean, I've heard some saying, they're kind of wrapping things up here with schools and, instead of kind of keeping everybody in for another month or two, just kind of end it and hopefully things would be better by summer. And then they'll, on the one hand, potentially be ready to go in the fall. But, the other scenario is that, the fall may be worse than the spring. And so, they say, looks good, all clear, and try to get back to normal in the fall, and then find out that the virus is back and it's more virulent or more lethal or both.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of, I thought we were done, and I thought the miracle happened, and I thought it was permanent. I didn't know it was a miracle for a month, and then we're back to where we were. So, the stock market's down 500 points again, free market for tomorrow. So, getting ready to.
That's the futures.
Four out of
tomorrow,
five
500 already. Yeah, wow.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was trying to get to with with Trump's speech and his record result. And we kind of went over a little bit yesterday, but what wasn't clear when he gave the speech was the ban on Europe. And there were a lot of Americans that were in Europe.
Right.
And they heard that, this ban goes into effect Friday, which is tomorrow now. And they were rushing to get tickets to fly to back home before the ban went into effect.
Whoever wrote that garbage.
And they were paid. Some were paying like $20,000 because there was, you know, no advance notice, and they needed, you know, to get a ticket back.
Right.
They don't want to get stranded in Europe. And then it comes, it turns out, well, it's not really the Americans. This is just for Europeans coming to America. It's not, Americans can do whatever they want. You know, they got to get screened when they come back, but they don't have a ban on Americans. And then I thought about it. It's stupid enough to go on to say, well, we're going to put a ban on, well, I don't even know what he put a ban on. Originally, it sounded like, well, we're going to put a ban on everything but the UK. And, yeah, the UK has plenty of virus. So there's really no reason to allow
UK people
those
here.
From the UK to come in. And then I heard that it's all balkanized. They've gone through, they've got an exemption for this country, and they got an exemption for that country. And it didn't really make that much sense anyway, because some of these countries are very small, and they have, you know, very little, at least on paper, activity at this time. So there's, you know, a lot more virus in the U.S. than there is in these smaller European countries. And I think they were starting to get some exemptions. But the point is that the virus coming from Italy isn't coming from Italians coming to the U.S. who are infected. I mean, people generally, if they're at home and they get infected, the next thing they do, they don't hop on a plane and go to another country. The ones that bring the virus back are Americans that go to Italy for, you know, a school trip or go there for a ski vacation, or
Henry Trump's
and they get infected. Yeah. That's how the virus comes back. It was a traveler from Italy. Well, it was an American traveler from Italy who traveled to Italy, got infected, and then came back. So it's not all of a sudden we got an influx of Italians that decided that once they got infected they were going to go to the United States. I mean,
one of the most ignorant, incompetent, stupid statements I've ever seen an alleged president make. Just unbelievably dumb. Well, and he never said one word about all the airlines flying in from East Asia. Japan Air, Korean Air. You can go online and book a flight right now from Seoul, South Korea, to the U.S.
I mean, and he does it on the day that a pandemic is declared. Once the pandemic is declared, number one, they do it very late. And so that means that the virus is everywhere. So basically saying that the virus, you know, you can't come from Italy. Italians can't come from Italy. When in fact, number one, Americans are the ones that bring in it from Italy. But number two, there's plenty of virus in the United States. And the thing that's so annoying, and we'll get to this in a little bit, is Trump says, well, this is effective because the U.S. has so few cases. And everybody knows that the reason the U.S. has so few cases is that they don't test. Not that they don't have the virus. They just don't have the confirmation, because the tests aren't available. And even when these, you know, phantom kits are shipped,
6 million of them,
you can't get them
because you can't meet the criteria. It's madness.
No, even when you can meet the criteria, they don't want to go through the paperwork or the procedure. I mean,
resistance all the way.
Listen, I tried to get tested here, okay? Because, you know, there's a long story, but anyway, there was an exposure. I had a cough. My family had it. There's lots of positives in Eastern PA. There are zero positives in Western PA. And so I called up the doctor. I said, well, you know, the cost's pretty much gone, but, you know, I think there may still be residual virus. I want to get a test to find out if I still have the virus. And, and then they said, and they started going through the criteria and you know, have you been out of the country? I said, no, I wasn't out of the country. It was through a contact. It was somebody from China who was coming, who was here and was coughing a lot. And then it kind of went through the family and everybody in the family got sick, including me. And, nobody was tested because it started back in January. There weren't any tests anyway. And now that there are tests, I was the last one on the list and I want to, you know, get tested. And, so A, there's the criteria. Well, did you have a fever and did you have shortness of breath? I said, no, but my daughter did, but I just had the cough. And said, oh, well, that's not really going to meet the criteria. You know, I'll call around and see if there's an emergency department that you can go see. But, you know, if you are the emergency department and you're not positive, you know, you might end up having this big copay, even if you've got insurance. Huh. And I thought that, you know, basically the copays were covered. I mean, this is, right. And, well, I don't know. It's kind of a fluid situation, and I'm not sure. But you realize that if I call and find an emergency department, you know, they're going to get all decked up, and they're going to put on these hazmat outfits, and they're going to do all of this to get ready for you to come there. And you know, I'm not sure who who actually is doing this, and I have to call around. And then he calls back 2 hours later, and I called around, and I checked, and, you know, you really don't meet the criteria. There's not a doctor in Western Pennsylvania that will write you out a prescription, and without a prescription, you can't get tested anywhere. So there's,
this is your personal
no
doctor.
You can get tested.
This is your family doctor.
Personal doctor. Right. So, well, this is the nurse kind of doing the screening. So that's where it was left. And then he actually did call back. And, mm-hmm. and he said that they are trying to get this test set up in-house at, UPMC, the medical center here. And, you know, day to day, and if they get it set up in the next day or two, they'll give me a call and they'll set it up. I can go in and do it. So it has been, it's been 2 days. It hasn't happened yet, but you know, it's going to be harder and harder for me to be test positive, even if I was infected, because I don't really have the cough anymore. So in any event, but there are zero cases in Western Pennsylvania for a reason. It's not that there was zero virus. There are zero cases because, and I heard about other people that were more convincing than me that, you know, had a high fever, had some type of exposure and were told that, well, you know, you're really not that sick and you're going to home quarantine anyway, and, you know, we can't really get the test, and da-da-da-da-da, and they still haven't been tested. So, you know, where these tests are, even if they're there, I mean, they're talking about the cost is supposed to be covered, there isn't supposed to be any copay that you're supposed to end up paying. I mean, the whole idea is to get people tested, not to scare them off that it's going to cost them a couple thousand dollars or something because they went and they did a PCR test. Yeah, you know. So in any event, there's some areas that even though there are kits in Pennsylvania, the only place they're really, you know, using their kits is, Eastern PA, although there is a rumor that there is a case in Allegheny County, and they just haven't announced it yet. So I don't know. So but even if there's one, there's 22 in Eastern Pennsylvania and counting. I mean, there's new cases every day. They actually update the website 2 or 3 times a day, actually. Uh-huh. So in any event, getting back to Trump's speech. That, you know, I'm not going to go through the speech a whole lot, but the results from the speech was, you know, before the market opened, the it kind of looked like, well, it wasn't that bad because last night it was down close to 5%. And this morning it was close to 5%.
Right.
But if you looked at it this morning, it was always 5%. And that's because 5% is the down limit for the pre-market. So it had already hit the limit, and it was down 5%. It was down 5% until it opened. And then the level it has to go to kind of halt trading is 7%. And it was down 7% at the open, but it took a couple minutes because I think all the, based on the S&P 500, so all 500 or almost all 500 had to open before they actually paused. It took a couple minutes and it basically, got halted, and then 15 minutes later, it started going down again. And then it kind of bounced around between 7 and 10%. And then it, at the end of the day, it ran right up to 10%. So it broke Monday's record. So Monday was a record for, point drop. It was over 2000. And, today it was also over 2000, but it was higher than Monday. So today was the market's response to his speech was to go down more points than any other day in in the New York Stock Exchange history. And it even went down on the percentage side because the market is going down. So when it goes down over 2000, now it's actually a 10%. So it went down 10% today, and and that was the highest since 1987 percentage wise is the worst day on record. It was I mean, I remember that day. It was October 19th, 1987, and it was. I just remember exceedingly well. I was going down. I was in San Diego at the time, and I had started this biotech, and I was going up to Palo Alto to meet Signer Perkins to convince him to spend $100,000 on a gel reader. And
on a what?
Gel reader. So we did a lot of Westerns and it's automated everything and put it into a big database and did analysis. And in any event, I remember flying up there and kept asking how low the market was. And, you know, every time I'd ask, I mean, back then I think I had a BlackBerry. I didn't have a cell phone. I had a cell phone in the car, you know, in the council, but it didn't really have back in 87, everything that you got today. So in any event, it just kept going down and kept going down and ended up 508 points down. It was 25%. And they did approve the gel reader, but I ended up flying back with Joe Lacob, who was at Kleiner Perkins at the time. And all he kept saying was, yeah, there is no reason for this. but in contrast to 1987, there actually was a reason for the market to go down 10% today. And that was Trump's speech just didn't give anybody any confidence that anything good was going to come as far as he was planning
on
doing.
One of the worst things I've ever seen. Just
well,
terrible.
That's what the market thought also. And so
sure
that
did.
Was a
2,349 points worth.
Yeah. So that was record levels. And then there's the, I mean, the other changes, what you kind of talked about at the beginning with Justin Trudeau's wife is positive. But the press secretary for Brazil. Now, I don't know if you saw that.
I've got the pictures up. If you load the homepage, I've got both pictures with this guy from Brazil with Pence and Trump right there.
Not a lot of social distancing in that picture.
About 2 inches? Maybe.
Yeah. They're a little shy on the 6 feet or whatever. And the
story is Trump is deathly afraid of being around anyone who's infected. Maybe he gave it to the Brazilian. Who knows? I don't know. I'm kidding. But I've got the pictures up there if you want to see them.
Wait till tomorrow, because the guy on the left, your picture, he's getting tested, and he'll have his results tomorrow and see if Trump and Pence were surrounded, and they got one guy on either side that had COVID positive.
Guy was not, are you talking about the guy on the right? The guy on the left was a Brazilian.
So was the guy on the right. He was the press secretary. The guy on the right is already confirmed. The guy on the left is the president, and he has been tested today, and his results are coming tomorrow.
Tomorrow, okay.
So if he's positive, Trump and Pence will be surrounded. They'll have one on each side. Like you said, there's the virus is definitely going around, and Washington, D.C. is just going to be loaded with the virus.
Case fatality rates, people are sending me in notes here. Italy's CFR is 45%. It's still in the U.S., according to one of our listeners, 75% here.
Yeah. Well, there aren't a whole lot that are... that have been discharged. I mean,
this virus doesn't go away. It's
right,
like
right.
The relative who stops in to say hello and stays indefinitely. China reported only 4 new cases of coronavirus in the last 24 hours today. Come on,
yep.
China.
The numbers are definitely moving in the countries outside. I mean, Italy went up. There are over 1,000 deaths now. Their deaths went up about 20% one day, over 20%. And their cases went up. They're up to 15,000 cases or so. And they've kind of outpaced Iran. Iran's got less than half that on the deaths. They've got 429 is what I got. And if you recall, it wasn't that long ago when they first announced that they had like 15, and other reports said that there were 50.
What happened
deaths
to the 50? I still want to know if that 50
right.
was that
well,
real or not.
It was 429 now, so I think the 50 was real, and it's not real for long. It's totally eclipsed by almost 10 times as many deaths.
Right.
And then the one that's, outside of China, the one that's third is actually Spain. And, I had highlighted Spain in several of the updates. And back on February 21st, when I said things were kind of tipping, Spain had zero. They in fact had 2 cases. That was it. They had 2 cases, no deaths. And, that was 3 weeks ago. And, now they've got 3,000 cases and 86 deaths and another 190 in serious condition. So it's, Europe definitely increased dramatically, and they look, much more, much higher than the U.S., but they started testing when Iran and Italy were both, spreading the virus. And when that was happening, they wanted to make sure that they weren't getting infected from those two countries. So they started bumping up the testing like 3 weeks ago. And so they've got to the numbers that they have, which is, approaching Italy's numbers. They're not there yet. They're significantly below, because Italy's actually starting to accelerate now. But they're not that far from where Italy was a week ago. And the U.S. is officially at 1,300, but that's, most of that is really coming from New York and Washington State. And I heard Washington State, one of the guys at University of Washington lab that was involved with doing the sequencing and screening. And he said that they're, they got 100 positives today, and that they're largely screening patients that are in hospitals that don't have a diagnosis. I guess they're flu negative. And he says they're getting about 10% positive. So they're essentially, screening 1,000 in a day, and they're getting 100 positives. And so the numbers are going up pretty dramatically in the deaths. I mean, the one I'm looking at says 36, but I think in Washington alone, they're up to 39 now. So the deaths are going up. And I was trying to get a sense as to, what exactly were they measuring? Because, a lot of people have made projections on how fast the virus is spreading and what the R-naught is. And, all of that is kind of, dependent upon how good the data is, the initial data. You have garbage in, garbage out. So, if the numbers really aren't that good to begin with, you can put it into your model and come up with a number, but the number's going to be as bad as the input data. And so it just seems to be that widespread there because they put up the tables. They've got, I think, over about a dozen counties now in Washington. They're not just in King. They're not just in King and Snohomish. They're in about 8 or 10 other counties. So it's pretty widespread there. And so far, every sequence that has come out of Seattle, other than an import, one that actually, came from outside of the country and there's actually only one that's been sequenced anyway. All the rest were locals or contacts of
You know how many South Korea's tested now, Henry?
I don't know. I would say like 100,000 or something.
220,000.
But I think that's why they've got such a low case fatality rate, because they've got what I'm looking at, they've got 7,800 positives and they've only got 66 deaths. Right. And I think because they're screening at that level, they're picking up the milder cases and they're picking up quite a few
that's
of them.
Right.
So a lot of the ones they're picking up, probably don't even get hospitalized. They're being, quarantined in their home. Some of them probably are asymptomatic. Other ones have mild symptoms. And, if they don't develop pneumonia and they're mild, the case fatality rate is going to be zero for those. So they've, kept the number of deaths down because they're screening a lot of people in the area and getting a lot of these initial ones. Now they're important for getting moving the virus around, and that's what's not being done in the United States. There isn't aggressive. I mean, even in Washington, it sounded to me like they're testing mostly patients that are hospitalized. So they've got, some level of disease and they're right. still, bumping the numbers up. I think they're number one in the country as far as cases. They're up to 459, I think. And New York is right behind them. And the same thing is going on with New York. They've kind of zeroed in on New Rochelle, and they called out the National Guard, and they're going to basically, it's more to clean the place up than anything. So they're closing the schools and closing the businesses and sending the guard in to kind of clean things up in like a 1 mile radius or of the
1 mile
of the synagogue where the index case was. And so they're trying to control the spread, because I think they've got over 100 cases in that 1 mile radius, and mm-hmm. And so they're trying to keep the virus in there. It's not that people can't leave the area, but they're trying to avoid mass gatherings. And that's, that's going around. The idea of doing the limits, I think in Washington, I think they're limiting crowds to 500 or so. So they're limiting large gatherings, and then they're doing the same type of thing in New York City because the numbers are starting to go up there. I think they're up to 70 or 80 or something. So it's less than 100, but it's starting to get relatively big there. And so they're trying to avoid the larger gatherings. And I think that's what's so remarkable is that, it's wide ranging. It's not that you can just kind of ignore it. They said that there are going to be some changes people are going to notice them. And, people that, want to have people over to watch the football, or not football, the hockey game, or the March Madness.
Well, they're not going to be watching anything now.
I mean, reruns about all they're going to see on that front. And so they'll notice it. People that go try to get Purell or whatever, they'll notice it. It's going to be a major effort. I mean, it's not entirely clear how effective it's going to be. And part of the reason it isn't clear in the United States is it's still pretty unclear how many cases there are.
Singapore says we're not locking anything down. We're going to go right through it. That's the decision in Singapore.
Well, here it's hard to know just how widespread it is. And, they're talking about...
You saw what Ohio said, right? The state health director? He said we have 100,000 cases minimum in Ohio. That's what he said today.
Yeah.
I sent you the story, I think. Anyway.
Yeah, well, those numbers are probably real. There are that many cases that are here, and they're not really being tested, and the testing that is being done is even somewhat limited in scope on exactly who is being screened. It's not like they're screening everybody in a school where they had a positive, and it's not, although there really haven't been that many in school. Around here, they've been closing schools for cleaning just because somebody at school was a contact with somebody that was a positive. And that's what, it's unclear what they're going to do when they start getting positives. I mean, I guess Ohio...
What are they going to do? That's right.
Ohio and one other state has closed all the schools. It's again, spring break type of a thing. So they've closed the schools and are going on spring break. I don't know that they're staying closed. I suspect they're going to be closed for like 2 weeks and they'll reopen when spring break is over and they come back. But I'm not sure, if they start getting positives, that's inevitable. They're going to start getting positives in the schools. And whether they're going to close the schools and whether they're going to leave them closed for, 10 or 14 days or some arbitrary number. And then
how do we know that's enough to do anything, though? I mean, really, all the kids are going to do is be out and about and connecting with other people and socializing. That's what they're going to do, many of them.
Right. And they may come back infected. Right. So that's what I'm saying. It's on the one hand, the goal is to kind of do this, flatten the curve so that the hospitals don't get overrun and the hospitals can basically handle the load. On the other hand, the flattening the curve doesn't really diminish the number that get infected. It diminishes the outcome. I mean, it improves the outcome because they don't get to the point where they don't have the ventilators or ECMO machines, or they don't have the hospital beds to handle them, and then they die because they can't really be treated. So the idea is to spread it out so that they don't get to that level, and so the hospitals can handle them. But it doesn't necessarily decrease the number of people that get infected. And you know, so, I've seen estimates. I mean, they're talking 30%, 50% of the population is going to get infected. And if it's anything approaching that, there will be hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of deaths. Because you know, even if you take 1%, you got a third of the population. That's getting in the millions, and
well, 1%. Well, this goes along with what I've said.
A generous number.
China's got at least 2 million dead, at my best guess. I'm just watching this. Got to be. Oh, here's another one. You said you had the phone call from that doctor. Did you get his number? Did you call him back by any chance? The one from Portland?
Yeah. No, I got his number, but I didn't call him back.
Well, if he left his number, he's probably legit. Yeah. Oregon.
No. He's definitely legit. I mean, it was the Portland number that came in on his cell phone, and he's called me before. No, that's a real person, a real ER doctor.
Oregon is only going to receive a small fraction of the PPEs and masks that they need for their healthcare professionals. This is another example of the enormous failure of the Trump administration. They've had 2 months to deal with this. They've done nothing. It's bad.
And that's why he called me. He called me because that's what they told him. They said that they didn't really need the mask. Or they did have a mask, they could do these, you know, carpenter masks or whatever.
Painter's mask.
Painter's mask. It was you know, the virus was just droplet, so you didn't really need that much of a barrier. It wasn't it's going to be airborne in individual particles. It's just going to be droplets, and so you just need some type of barrier.
Here's the story
about the whole size
from Oregon officially. Oregon officials say they will be getting just a fraction of the personal protective equipment, PPEs, sought from the U.S. government for frontline medical workers treating coronavirus patients. Nick Blosser, Governor Kate Brown's chief of staff, told the AP the federal response was staggeringly inadequate. Governor Brown wrote to VP Pence on March the 3rd, by the way, if Pence and Trump get sick, we have President Nancy Pelosi, wrote to Pence on March the 3rd saying Oregon needed 400,000 N95 respirator masks and the same number of gowns and gloves and disposable protective suits, plus up to 100 ventilators in case coronavirus spread more widely in the state. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and CDC advised the governor's office that Oregon will be receiving 36,000 N95 masks, 87,000 surgical masks, 16,000 face shields, 13,000 surgical gowns, and 48,000 pair of gloves. No ventilators at all. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, part of the issue is that they're already stretched thin, and they haven't really begun. They're just stretched thin in preparation. And that's, I think that's one of the reasons, you know, so many people are kind of taking it seriously and looking at how they can mitigate the situation, because there's all these indications that, you know, if they get anything like Italy are, you know, approaching those types of numbers. And like I said, it's not clear how far away from Italy they are, because they really don't know how many patients they have. And
2 weeks and we could be Italy and several places around this country.
Right. It kind of gets to this critical mass, and then, you know, it's increasing logarithmically. And, you know, 1 to 2 is not a lot, but, you know, 10,000 or 20,000 is. And so once it gets up there, and these numbers start to, you know, double every 3 or 4 days, then, you know, the numbers go up very, very quickly. And, you know, they can't really trace them. They're going in all directions. And that's very possible that'll happen, because that seems to be what's going on in Italy, where they, you know, had 800 deaths yesterday, and now they got over 1,000. And so it's, you know, a couple of hundred die per day. And, you know, Italy's not that big a country, and most of these deaths, I think, are in the northern part, so it's not even the whole country is contributing, you know, equally to those numbers. It is somewhat concentrated. And, you know, the worry is that the exact same thing is going to happen here, and it's closer than people realize, because the virus really doesn't care whether anybody's doing any testing or whether the test works. Yeah, you know, they're going to go ahead and affect whoever they're going to affect, regardless of what the CDC is or isn't doing, and state labs. So it's go ahead.
Here's another note on Ohio. This is how they projected that 100,000 figure. The Ohio Department of Health Director Amy Acton said on Thursday that there are at least 100,000 people infected right now with coronavirus in Ohio, 1% of the population. She said the much lower number of confirmed cases statewide came as a result of the limited testing available so far. The state has banned all gatherings of more than 100 people in a single space, as the head of Ohio's Department of Health asserted that the next few days are crucial in an attempt to contain the infection. We know just the facts of community spread say that at least 1%, at the very least, 1% of our population is carrying this virus in Ohio today. We have 11.7 million people. We have never seen a situation exactly like this before, ever. So there you go. That's Ohio. That's how they do it. 1%. Just multiply.
And that's what, I mean, like, never seen before. Those are the types of comparisons. I mean, the comparisons are really talking about 1918 comparisons, because it's, because the combination is not just that the virus spreads efficiently, but it's that it's lethal. And, you know, it's got a higher case fatality rate than SARS does. And, you know, that's the major myth out there, that, you know, well, SARS is a lot more deadly, but it's not at all true, because the SARS CFR is based upon pneumonia cases. And if you just look at pneumonia cases for SARS-CoV-2, it's higher. It's like 1.5 times as high, closer to 15% than 10%. And so that's just a bad combination. If you have a combination where you got a virus that's that deadly, and it's it's got a R01, even if it's 3, you know, it might be 4, it might be 5, but even if it's just 3, mm-hmm. 2, even sure. 2.5 or 3, that's going to, you know, spread pretty dramatically. And it's probably been spreading for a while, so it's kind of getting to this critical mass. And once it does that, then it just starts showing up everywhere, because it takes just a few days before you got twice as many. And and then, you know, even if you start identifying them because they're showing up at the hospital, it doesn't take long before, you know, you got twice as many showing up in the hospital a few days later. And the original ones are still there if they haven't died. And, you know, because they're not going to be discharged immediately. And And the ones that are showing up are going to be the more serious cases. The milder cases, you know, are probably still trying to get tested. But the more serious ones are going to, you know, basically be brought in by the paramedics or whatever. And they're going to be tested, and they're going to be positive, and they're going to be admitted, and they're going to require ventilators or ECMO machines. So that's kind of where we're heading, and that's why I say everybody's kind of going along with the social distancing and trying to do what they can. But, you know, whether they're going to get the desired result, I think is still the jury's out. But I think we'll find out in a matter of days or a few weeks.
Correct. Yeah, Japan's Olympic minister has completely brushed off Donald Trump's suggestion the Tokyo Olympics be postponed. Olympic Minister Seiko Hashimoto told a news conference Friday that the International Olympic Committee and Japanese organizers are, quote, not considering cancellation or a postponement, absolutely not at all, end quote. Famous last words? Well, we'll see. Thank you, Henry.
I mean, in a couple of weeks, you know, they'll be eating those words. I mean, it's not going to be pretty.
Make sure they got a lot of ketchup. All right. Thank you. Talk to you tomorrow.
Take care.
Okay. All right. Dr. Henry Nyman, and thanks for being here. We'll keep tracking it for you. It's all up at rents.com, and you can share that. Certainly pass it around. Study it. Make of it what you will. And we will be right back with you tomorrow night. Take care.